If you are visiting with us, thank you so much for being here. You were given a worship bulletin when you came in. There will be a little QR code on the front of that. And if you are willing, snap a picture of that with your phone. And if you give us some information, that would be great. And we're just so grateful that you're here, whether you're from our community or you're here because of the festivities that start on Thursday morning. I think most of you start with Thanksgiving Day. And so we're glad that you're here. I should take about 10 seconds to thank Brandon Reynolds. Brandon came all the way from Abilene to cover for me on Sunday last week. And I have heard from many of you, when can we get rid of you and get Brandon? and the answer is, if I could convince him, I would do it in a heartbeat. So Brandon, it was great to see that young man. I watched him online with many of you and was privileged to get to hear his word. So thank you for being so encouraging to a young preacher. You don't know this, but we've been studying some parables. I'm kind of in and out the last couple of months. And the passage I want us to look at this morning is not a parable per se, but yet I think it brings in some things that we need to talk about kind of post all of the stuff we were studying in our Bible class. And so I want us to maybe kind of cap off what Carrie was teaching in the adult Bible classes with this little text. And to kind of lead into that text, I think I can probably feel pretty assured that one of the things that frustrates God the most is when we talk about how much we love Him, but then we don't show how much we love the rest of the world around us. And not that we're mean and not that we're ugly, although we do probably have moments of being those things, as much as we are uncaring and maybe unconvinced that they matter. And so I want us to spend a few minutes on what happens when we get out in the world and start doing what we've been talking about, and talking to our neighbors, and talking to our friends, and talking to our coworkers, and trying to take the story of the gospel that has transformed us into those relationships. I was having a conversation out in the hall of a guy who's got a little kind of a group of guys he plays basketball with, and they are always asking him tough questions. That's exactly what we've been trying to figure out how to do here, is how do we take those circles around us and have those moments and those opportunities to say, here's what God says. And I hope we can wrestle with this little line from Jesus about us being workers in the kingdom because the fields are ripe for harvest. Okay, let's just read our text this morning. Here's what Jesus says. Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. And then Jesus said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of harvest, therefore, to send out workers into the harvest field." Okay, my guess is if you've been around church, you've heard this passage. And my guess is you have heard us use the line, the fields are white for harvest. And you'll probably hear, at least to some degree, a version of that phrase throughout this sermon. But I think what it speaks to first, before it even speaks to fields that are white for harvest, is it speaks to our priorities. I want to just give yourself an internal answer. What do you pray about the most? Okay, so kind of take 10 seconds and think about that. What do you pray about the most? Okay, if you're me, which none of you are and you should thank God for, if you're me, you've got a book. And in that book, you've got a few things. You have got those who are sick, and you have got those that are wrestling, and you have got those that are jobless. And then you've got another section where you've got some that you're working on, that you're praying over, and you've got your own concerns in your life with your own failings and your own troubles and sins. And then maybe you got a broader context of praying over your children or praying over your parents or your grandchildren. And every morning or evening, however you do it, or maybe throughout the day, you kind of break open that book and you go through those lists and you talk to God about them. What's on those lists shows a lot about what matters the most to you. Okay, my guess is if you are young and you've got kids in your brood, the first thing on your list is, how do I raise these kids right? And you're already praying about when they start school, and you're praying about who they're going to marry in 20 years, and you're praying about the things they wrestle with, and you're praying about you that you'll discipline and you'll be consistent, and you'll figure out all those things, and that's a priority in your life, and so it's top on your list. Some of you are older, and your body's giving you fits. And maybe a knee doesn't work, or a back isn't working right, or you've got some heart issues, or you can't quite think as smooth as you used to think. And so on your list is you're praying for God to help you through pain, or through memory issues, or through a heart problem, or fill in the blanks. Because that matters to you. Now here's my question. Is there lost people on that list? And is there a desire to take to the throne of God not only the people that we want to go to heaven, which ought to be a whole bunch, but also are we praying for each other, and are we praying for hearts that might accept? Because that shows priority. See, a lot of times my prayer life is a direct reflection over the things that matter the most to me, because those are the things I know I can take to a Father in heaven who's got the power to do that. So do you pray to be the harvester? Do you pray, and we don't do the harvesting. I think God does that part. But do we pray? Okay, we sing that old song, and I meant to tell Wayne to lead it, and I didn't, so I apologize. This is all on me. We used to sing a song called "I Want to Be a Worker for the Lord." Do we pray that and look for the opportunities to do exactly that? See, I look at Jesus, and I watch him in the midst of this story, and here's what I see. The first thing is Jesus is burdened about the spiritual condition of the lost. Remember what he says? He says, they are like sheep without a shepherd. That in the midst of this little story that Matthew is telling, Jesus is looking out, and he's teaching, and he's doing the miraculous, and he's doing all those things in this early part of his ministry, and he looks out at this helpless group of people, and he says, they are like sheep without a shepherd. And Matthew says he feels great compassion. Okay, this word compassion is a word that would be interesting in the world they live in. We think of compassion as the act of, I have compassion on you when you're going through something difficult. I think, well, April's struggling with this, and so I have compassion, and I'm nice to April, and I tell April, I'm praying for you, I hope all this goes well. That's how we think of compassion. The Jew in the early days of the Bible would see so much more to compassion than just that. It would be this thing that would be deep within inside you that would well up, and my guess is you felt it at times. Maybe you've seen a family member go through some horrible struggles, and your stomach almost churns. That's compassion. Maybe you've seen a coworker who gets diagnosed with cancer, and you say something like this, that just breaks my heart. Well, that would be this compassion that churns from within you. And so Jesus looks at the lost that are surrounding him, and he doesn't do it with contempt. He does it with compassion. Now, our tendency, I'm afraid, and if I'm being fully confessional, as I do this every now and then, and I'm trying to quit, is we tend to look with contempt. Well, they're in that situation because of their own doing. Well, if he didn't have that addiction, he wouldn't have that problem. Or if he'd go out and get a job, he wouldn't be homeless. Or if and we fill in all of these blanks, and instead of having a heart that is broken inside, we look and say, well, this is on them, and this is their problem, and rah, 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 rah. And instead of having a heart that looks like Jesus, we have a heart that looks like the Pharisees. And we've talked over and over and over again, if our heart is like the Pharisees, we got the wrong heart. And so Jesus felt this compassion on them. And then Jesus will shift his focus, not on their sinfulness. Okay, now hear me out for a second. Jesus is concerned with sin. And one of the lines Jesus will give in a few places is, don't sin anymore. And one of the things Jesus will say to good law-abiding Jews is he's going to say, let's redefine sin and make it more than just not hitting the Big Ten. But Jesus, at least for a second, focuses more on their helplessness than on their sinfulness. Okay, it's pretty easy for good little church people like us to point our finger and say, you are here because of your predicament and because of the mess that you created and because of the junk you're doing. And that's not the way for us to start, because that's not the way Jesus started. And my guess is if you've been in that situation where you were the helpless one that was the lost sheep on the hillside, so to speak, you didn't need a lecture. You needed some compassion. Okay, second thing is I think we need, like Jesus, to be open to the spiritual potential of the lost. Okay, another way to describe compassion is compassion in the Hebrew sense was this love. Maybe the best way to define it is love from the womb. Okay, so let me illustrate it this way. When you found out you were having a baby, how quick did you start loving that baby? Okay, I found out I was having, well, I wasn't having it. that's good. I found out in the middle of a Brazilian trip that Jonah was on the way. And that kind of, that changed everything about the Brazilian trip. And I spent the whole Brazilian trip praying for a boy. Didn't know he was going to be a boy then. I really wanted a girl, but don't tell him. I started praying about that, what was happening next. And it didn't take very long for me to fall in love with that kid that was still 8 months away from being born. I think that's the way God is. When God looks at the sheep, and we're all sheep, it's just some of us are found. When God looks at the sheep, he sees the ones that are safe and secure and that are under the guidance of the shepherd, but he also sees the ones that are lost, and he sees within them what they could be. I think we all probably have friends, and it seems I have a number of them that have dealt with the difficulty of a miscarriage. And the hardest part of a miscarriage is every year when that rolls around, you think, my child would be 3 or 4 or 5. And there's in the back of your head, what might have been? And the reason there is that sorrow, and the reason there are those days of mourning, is because you love that child the minute the doctor said he's coming. And that's the way God is. And certainly God must look at the sheep that are all over the pasture where they shouldn't be, and it must grieve him at least to some degree, saying, look at what they could be if someone could just help bring them to me. So we've got to look at the spiritual potential. See, when Jesus sees the sheep where they shouldn't be, he sees a harvest. Just think of a few characters. There's some lady named Mary Magdalene who is possessed and who's probably not living the best lifestyle, if you get what I mean. And yet Jesus sees her and he casts out the demons, and before you know it, Mary is one of this loyal group of women that seems to almost help him provide funds for him and is at the cross and is at the tomb. See, Jesus saw beyond the demonic, and Jesus saw beyond the lifestyle, and Jesus saw beyond the chaos that seemed to reign in Mary's life and said, let me inject a little bit of Jesus into you and let's see what happens. Or the guy who writes this passage. We know Matthew's story goes kind of like this. He's sitting at his booth collecting money, and Jesus walks up to him and sees potential that nobody else saw. Because everybody else saw Matthew, and they saw tax collector, and they saw buddy with the Romans, and they saw the guy who's jipping them saying, you really only owe $10, but why don't you pay me $12 and sticking $2 in his pocket? And he looks at Matthew, and he doesn't come right out and say, you've been jipping people for the last 10 years. He says, let me inject a little Jesus in you and come and follow me. Because he saw the potential there. And he envisioned in both of those characters, and my guess is you could count hundreds others that we see in the gospel story to say, here is what they could be. Okay, when you're having those conversations with your coworkers, and you're having those conversations with your neighbors, and you're having those conversations with the group you play basketball with or golf with or the group you play cards with on Friday morning, or whatever it is that's going on in your life, when you're around those people, see what God might be able to do through them. And I think that might change our perspective. But the third thing is Jesus knew that at least for some, there would be some spiritual readiness. Okay, he's looking out and he says the fields are ready for harvest. He's seeing some that are ready to be grabbed and chosen and brought to him. See, a harvest presupposes that there's already been seed sown. But what's interesting in the story that Jesus is telling The disciples haven't gone out yet. There hasn't been a sending of the 12, and yet he looks out at the group that is around him, and he says, they are ready for something. And it's this idea that God is in the midst of that. Okay, I am completely convinced, and you can argue with me if you want, and we'll have a good argument, but I am completely convinced that there are moments when those who are lost cry out to God, and God hears that prayer, and God intends to send you. Because they've got a need, and they're desperate. Are they his? No. Are they walking the way they should be? No. Are they getting rid of their sin? No. But I think if anybody on this planet walks with two legs and then says to God, God, I need something, I think we've got a God that hears that. And one of the ways he's going to address those needs is he's going to use us. And so we harvest sometimes where we haven't sown. Some of my favorite stories are times when somebody has run into me or I've run into them, and they've got some questions that need to be answered, and for whatever reason, I've got the right answers and I can share that, and we leave that moment with a different perspective and a different angle. I did nothing the week before to bring that to my attention, but God put it in front of us. And sometimes the lost are ready to be harvested. Okay, sometimes the lost feel so helpless and harassed, remember those two words from the text, that they don't know where to go. And if they come to you, you know where to go. If they come to you saying, I'm wrestling in my marriage, or I'm wrestling with my kids, or I'm wrestling with an ethical dilemma going on, or I'm wrestling with how to take care of my aging parents, or I'm wrestling with, and we fill in 100 different blanks, you've got the opportunity when they're helpless and harassed to point them to Jesus. One writer said this. He said, the harsh winds of life often make people ready for something greater. Okay, now think about that from a church perspective. When you've had the harsh winds of life, that's either done one of two things. It's either drawn you closer to God or it's pushed you way far away. And if you're in the room, my guess is it's drawn you closer. The same is true for outside of us. That the hardships and the difficulty and the craziness of life, that ought to draw us looking for something greater to figure it out. And who better than God's people who have been through the harsh winds of life to share a story? So we've got the opportunity to do that. Okay, I remember, and maybe some of you don't, and maybe this is just preacher remembering, I don't know. But I remember the Sunday after 9/11. So remember, 9/11 happens on Tuesday. We had a big prayer thing Wednesday night. I remember vividly. We were in the small fellowship, and we just gathered and we prayed. And all the elders prayed, and the preachers we had at that time, they all prayed, and we sang one or two songs, and that was kind of it. But I remember that Sunday, there were about 30 or 40 faces that I had never seen before. And they weren't traveling through on the way to Ruidoso for vacation. Something harsh had happened. Something, to use the words of C.S. Lewis, the harsh winds of life happened. And there was this openness and some hearts that were suddenly exposed. And they say, here's what we witnessed and here's what we saw and here's the tragedy of 9/11. And it drew people to God, and songs were written about it and all kinds of stuff. Because there was a moment and there was an opportunity for when a heart was rended. And we could get in to help fix it. So we've got to be aware that those moments happen. The fourth thing is I think we've got to be, and this goes back to where we started, we've got to be committed to the priority of prayer for those who are working in the vineyard. Well, he's not using a vineyard, for those who are in the field. Okay, let me tell you this. I pray for you every single day. Well, not each one of you every single day. You guys are divvied up. Do you want to be divvied up? You guys are divvied up into groups of 8 to 10. And every morning, 8 to 10 of you get prayed over directly by me in my office. And I pray for your jobs. And if you got kids, I pray for your kids. And if you're a teenager, I pray that you finally get that A in biology that you need to get. And if you're whatever's going on in your life, I'm praying over those things. One of the things that I have added into that prayer, and you may not like me when I say this, is I have said, God, you stick people in their way that they can help. And you stick people in their way that they can talk to you about. And you put people in there, and if they've got to trip over them, you put them there. so that they can do what you have called all of us to do. See, that line from the very end of the story was praying for workers in the kingdom. Now, do we do that? Do we pray for each other? Do we pray? You know, I love in Bible class on Wednesday, Dale English always says, when we do prayer requests, he says, pray for the missionaries. I am all for praying for the missionaries. But you know what? You are that same person. You may not be in the Philippines, or you may not be in Brazil, or you may not be on the reservation, but you are in the midst of a world that is going cattywampus, and it's away from God, and you're just as much a missionary as Mike Pruitt is. And the call is why aren't we praying for that? Why aren't we praying for us as we go about our lives that are in the midst of a field that's ready for harvest? The last thing is we've got to be excited when God answers the prayer by sending you. I got in trouble for this, not from elders or anything, just from ladies. I know that strikes you odd that I would get in trouble for ladies. About 10 or 12 years ago, we had three or four ladies, all that have moved since then. Maybe this is why they moved. And I called them my attack dogs. That's probably why they moved. They were the sweetest, kindest, most loving people. And if I saw some visitors come in, I would say, okay, you guys go. And they would scurry around, and they better not be listening. I'm going to be in trouble for that one too. All three of them would make it their biggest goal to welcome the visitors and to love on them and to encourage them and to help them. And they were great at that. And they were excited to be doing that. And my idea behind it was I want to put them in their path. And when those opportunities come, be excited for them. Because if you've been praying for those opportunities, and if your preacher has been praying for you to have those opportunities, when you finally and suddenly are the answer to somebody else's prayer and trouble, then the work of God is being done. You may not have an answer right then and there, and that's okay. You may have to say, let me think about it, or let me text my preacher, or are you willing to talk with him and us, and let's go to coffee. There may be one of 10 things you can do to help bridge that gap when they come to you with a need, but if you're in their path, rejoice that you've got the opportunity to affect them in some godly way. Every time I read this passage from Matthew, and this section only appears like this, in Matthew, here's what I think Jesus wants. He wants servants in his kingdom who will feel it in their gut and who will drop down on their knees and then will get up on their feet and go. That's my call to you. When you see the lostness of the world around us, I hope it hits you in the gut. And I hope it brings you to your knees. But then I hope it lifts you up onto your feet to go do what God has placed you here to do. In whatever way you're doing it. Whether you're the school teacher, whether you're the doctor, whether you're the attorney, whether you're the retiree, whether you're the student, whether you're the one that just plays pickleball every Thursday and Tuesday. Figure out ways to let God shine through you. About 2 months ago, I was in Albuquerque with a bunch of young preachers. And one of those preachers, man, he was just grief-stricken. And he was to the point of almost weeping. And he says, the community that I live in, they are so lost. And they're so caught up in this and this and this. And they're so caught up in all this stuff that is sinful and ungodly. And I don't know what to do. My favorite part of that whole weekend with all those preachers is all those other young preachers gathered around that kid, he was probably 25, gathered around that young man who was weeping over the lostness, and they embraced him, and they prayed over him, and they said, come on, let's go do the work. Okay, more than anybody, I know how hard it is taking the gospel out to that world. My prayer is that we don't just have our hearts broken and our knees calloused because we're praying, but I hope we can grab each other and say, let's go do the work. and let's do it together. Because even if it doesn't look like it, I think the harvest is out there. And the call is for us to be his workers. So we're going to sing the song that Wayne has chosen. If you need somebody to talk with, some struggles, some problems, some things going on in your life, elders are in this room. I'm down here at the front. Find us. We'll talk about it. If you're ready to start a journey where you're one of the workers with us because you believe that God has done something to save you, then we'd love to welcome you into his family and watch you be baptized and celebrate what God does. But if you need us, let us know as we stand and sing. Wayne?